The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Gospel of Grace podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. We would love to have you worship with us in person sometime. The church address is 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m.
In the previous sermon on Revelation chapter 17, we learned that Babylon in the Bible, while a real historical place, here represents this wicked world system. This Babylonian world system is and has always been opposed to God and to his kingdoms on earth. Today, Elder Buddy Abernathy first reviews for us what Babylon represents, and then takes us to the conclusion of the chapter where we learn that this wicked world system is a kingdom divided against itself. This wicked world system is self-destructive, and ultimately God will put it down permanently. Join us today as we conclude our look at Revelation chapter 17.
In the Bible, the city of Jerusalem is mentioned more than any other city. It is referenced about 800 times. Zion, which is the mountain upon which Jerusalem was built, is mentioned about 150 times. So that's getting close to 1,000 times that Jerusalem or Zion is mentioned. Jerusalem was the place where the one true and living God was worshiped. Jerusalem means foundation of peace or possession of peace. And as we think of the church as being Jerusalem in a spiritual sense, that should describe our experience in the church when we come to know the truth, that it's a place of peace, a foundation of peace. Isn't it true that the true gospel gives you a foundation of peace that you can't find anywhere else? It's a possession of peace in the Lord's true church. Now, interestingly, the second most often mentioned city in the Bible is Babylon. It's referenced about 300 times. Now, that's only about a third as many times, but it's interesting to me that it's mentioned second only to Jerusalem. It's mentioned about 300 times. Babylon is the city of man. It means confusion. It is a symbolic representation of spiritual corruption, opposition to God, and worldly powers that lead people away from God. I believe it represents all the forces of this world working in opposition to God. I believe Babylon is representative of everything that makes up what we call the world, which is at odds with God and at odds with His kingdom. By name, Babylon is mentioned 6 times in the book of Revelation. It's mentioned once in chapters 14, 16, and 17, and then 3 times in chapter 18. Each time it's referenced, it's described in terms of its destruction and ruin. The expression Babylon is fallen is mentioned a number of times in these verses. So before we try to get refocused on chapter 17, let's just read and comment from these other references prior to chapter 17. In Revelation chapter 14, beginning in verse 6, he says, "And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, Fear God and give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment is come, and worship Him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters." Now, when you read verses like this, it's giving us a broad perspective. And notice what it's bringing to our attention. It says that there was this angel flying through heaven having the everlasting gospel to preach to them that dwell on the earth. That's what preachers do, is they preach the everlasting gospel to those that dwell on the earth. And notice that what our focus is to be, even as we sit here tonight, he says, saying with a loud voice, fear God. Did not Solomon say in Ecclesiastes that the whole duty of man is to fear God and keep His commandments? And that's what he says here. With a loud voice, when the gospel is preached, yes, we're comforted by the finished work of Christ. That brings rest to our souls. That gives us that foundation of peace that I talked about earlier. We can lay hold on that peace in the gospel, but then that motivates us to serve the Lord, to reverence Him. As he says here, that we're to fear God and give glory to Him. Why? For the hour of His judgment has come. Our perspective as we sit here tonight is that we rejoice in the gospel, we're comforted by the gospel, but we fear God. We know the hour of His judgment is come. Whether you lived in the first century or the 21st century, your perspective is to be no different. The hour of His judgment is come. And the judgment under consideration here is His second coming and the judgment of the wicked and the consummation of all things and when all of His people will be taken to heaven to be with Him. So He says with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment is come, and worship Him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. I think it's interesting that He singles out those fountains of waters, because you remember in that first judgment on the earth, in Noah's day, it said the fountains of the great deep were broken up. You see, all this is here to remind us that God is a God of power and a God of judgment. And we're to worship Him that made all these things. The one that made those fountains of the great deeps. The one that made everything in creation. We're to worship Him and give Him glory. His judgment is come. Amen. And He says then, verse 8, and there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Now I want you to understand the significance of this phrase. First of all, we see that as we fear God and we give glory to Him and we worship Him and we have this possession of peace and we have the outlook that His judgment has come, we recognize that when He does come and His judgment is meted out, that Babylon is fallen. And Babylon is that word that's representative of everything, of all the power of this world. And we'll see later in chapter 17 that Babylon, represented by the great whore, rides upon the beast, which is Satan. So Satan is under everything. He's under everything in the powers of this wicked world that are against God. He says, Babylon has fallen, that great city. Why? Because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Look, just think of the political scene in America today. And think of these terms in a spiritual sense. What does wine do? It intoxicates. You think of someone that is drunken. He says that that Babylon has fallen because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Those that would promote evil, ungodly, wicked policies are not tolerant. They're not patient. They want to force that upon you. They want to force the wine of the wrath of their fornication upon you. And fornication indicates that what they're involved in is opposed to God. And then notice in Revelation chapter 16 and verse 17. And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, it is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of His wrath. You notice the turnaround here? We read in chapter 14 about Babylon causing those to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Now God is forcing her to drink of the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. This is describing the end of this world system and everything about it. Every ungodly, immoral empire, every person that sits in a place of great authority who stands opposed to God, he says, all this is going to be brought down. It's all going to fall when the Lord brings his judgment, which he describes here as the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail. Now you remember Revelation? Generally when you read about men in this way, it's speaking of those that are not the children of God. He says, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and men blasphemed God. They didn't fear God. They didn't humble themselves. They weren't repentant. He says, when the hail fell upon them, they blasphemed God because the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. So wicked man, as we pointed out before, is not repentant under the judgment of God. So now, let's go to chapter 17. And I want to just try to get you refocused on what's under consideration here. Beginning in verse 1. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. Now I know this may be vile language, but it's Bible language. I'm just using the words the Bible uses. Notice he's not speaking here of adultery. He's not speaking of unfaithfulness. He's speaking of the great whore, one that's not married, never has been married. He's speaking of the great whore. In other words, this is not describing God's children being unfaithful to him like Jeremiah described them in chapter 3 and verse 1. Let's just turn to that. I always like to reference this one. Notice how merciful God is with his children in Jeremiah chapter 3. And verse 1, it says, they say, if a man put away his wife and she go from him and become another man's, shall he return unto her again? Shall not that land be greatly polluted? But thou, this is what the Lord's saying to his people, thou hast played the harlot with many lovers, yet return again to me, saith the Lord. The Lord said, you played the harlot with many lovers, but return again unto me, saith the Lord. Aren't you glad that God deals with us that way? We play the harlot with many lovers, but he says, return again unto me. But here in Revelation 17, he's speaking of a great whore that sitteth upon many waters. And those many waters are described in verse 15 as peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. In other words, that's just the Revelation's way of describing this is all over the world. And that's what he's saying here. He says, this great whore, which we're going to see later on, the word Babylon used in reference to her, this great whore, which is in opposition to God. Verse 2, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. They want to impose it on you. They want to force their ungodly, immoral agenda on you. Look at what's happening in our country today in the school system, where young children are being forced to be exposed to vile, ungodly things. That's what he's talking about here. He says, he goes on to say is that the kings and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. Now this is Satan, this beast here, full of names of blasphemy. That's fitting for him. Seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Now, if you can correct me, that's all right. But this is the one place I found in Revelation where Babylon is described with some detailed symbolic language. You see, this is all Babylon, referred to as the great whore, riding upon the beast. And the beast, we know, is Satan. And she's notice in verse 4, it says she has a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. This is Babylon the Great. The world at its best. The world with all of its power that it can amass. You know, the city of Babylon in the Old Testament was perhaps one of the, at that time, the greatest city in the world. And I've read a little bit about the walls around that city. That was the world in all of its strength and power. But you know, even that heathen king Nebuchadnezzar, who said, "Is not this great Babylon that I built by my power and my might?" Even he had to kneel down to God. When the Lord dealt with him and made him as a beast of the field, he said he worketh his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, "What doest thou?" Babylon is the world and all of its forces opposed to God. And we see that. It seems like it's really visible right now in our country, doesn't it? That you can see opposing forces. You see those that are trying to do that which is good and well for the country, and those that are violently opposed to it. There's always been this battle, whether we see it or not. It's always there, visible and invisible. You know, Paul said we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. This battle's always been going on. Now look at verse 6 of Revelation 17. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints. Doesn't that make it clear that this is the world? This is the world opposing God. And remember, this woman, referred to as Babylon the Great, is riding upon the beast. So this is Satan opposed to the people of God. She's drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Verse 9. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. Now, we've already addressed that. Let's go down to verse 12. And the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Now let's just try to make this as simple as possible. We have this beast, which is Satan. The woman, the great whore, mystery, Babylon the Great, is riding upon this beast. This beast has seven heads and 10 horns. The 10 horns are 10 kings. Now notice this. Verse 16, and this is actually where we're at in going through this book. And the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, thee shall hate the whore. Now that's strange, isn't it? A beast with a woman upon the beast. The beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. The 10 horns on the beast upon which the woman is riding, those 10 horns represent 10 kings. And he says, they shall hate the whore. Sounds like a kingdom divided against itself, doesn't it? That's what it is. A kingdom divided against itself. You remember me mentioning to you that in World War II, that Hitler entered into a non-aggression agreement with Stalin, I believe, for 10 years, and then it could be renewed for 5 more years. And in less than 2 years, Hitler invades the Soviet Union. That's what's going on here, see? And notice you say, well, why is this happening? Why is there this self-destruction? Why a kingdom divided against itself? It says, the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will. Now we know God's not the author of sin. But this says God put it in their hearts to fulfill his will. You know, God just can let wicked men fight each other, destroy each other. And that's what he's talking about here. God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. Now look at that carefully. God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast, the adversary, Satan, the devil, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest, listen now, the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. So here you have a detailed description of that word Babylon, the city of Babylon. And you see how that Satan is at the bottom of it all. And you see how that even though the woman is upon the beast, and even though you have those 10 horns that represent 10 kings, yet they have strife one with another, like a kingdom divided against itself. And they fall. God is sovereign over the affairs of men, isn't he? And while we may see times that God delivers us by allowing wicked men to destroy each other, one day the whole Babylonian kingdom, the whole system of this world, will be finally and fully destroyed and will be forever delivered from their assaults and persecutions.
Thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow when we'll present another message of God's sovereign grace. In the meantime, if you have any questions or would like to contact us, please go to the website at zionpbc.com, where you can subscribe and get email updates every time a new sermon or any announcements are posted. Also, you can contact me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter J, chrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for joining us today on the Gospel of Grace podcast, and may the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.